Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you're listening, around the world, this is Sedona Talk Radio.
Hello everyone and welcome to At the Movies with Joanna on Sedona Talk Radio. I'm Joanna Paxinou, and today we are absolutely thrilled and honored to welcome a very special guest. Robert Osborne is the host of Turner Classic Movies. He's a columnist for The Hollywood Reporter, and he's the Academy Awards official film historian, and he's just finishing his latest book covering 80 years of the awards, scheduled for publication this fall. As you know, At the Movies with Joanna focuses on the great stars and films of the 30s, 40s, and 50s, so I am an avid fan of Mr. Osborne. Watch him fervently. And one of the most wonderful things about Mr. Osborne is that he truly loves movies, and he shares this love along with his personal experiences in Hollywood and the stars he knew, and he shares this with the audience so well that we feel as if we knew the stars too. And he just makes the movies even more enjoyable. Mr. Osborne, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Joanna. I want to get your phone number so that when I get depressed at 3 o'clock in the morning sometime, I can call you and
happy,
you can cut me up.
Happy to give it
you
to you.
The, you can tell that speech again, and I'll feel wonderful.
Well, it's heartfelt. I'm really, truly a fan.
Thank you.
And as I said, there's so much to talk to you about, but first I'd like to talk about the Sedona International Film Festival and Workshop that's being held in Sedona this week, February 27th through March 2nd. And I understand you're showing two of my favorite classic films, Casablanca and Sunset Boulevard. And I wonder if you could tell us why you feel it's important to include classic films in Sedona's Film Festival, which, as you know, will focus on independent films being produced today.
Right. Well, I do think it's important to, you know, films like Casablanca and Notorious and All About Eve and North by Northwest and all kinds of films or movies that we show on Turner Classic Movies a lot, but you see them on a TV-sized screen. Even if you have a large screen at home, it's still on a screen on a television set. And there's nothing quite like the experience of seeing a great film on a huge screen, the way it was really meant to be seen in the theater, and sharing it with a lot of other people. So we thought it would be a great idea to have that experience and have people that are coming to the Sedona Film Festival to be able to have that experience. And in this case, it's going to be Casablanca is one of them, and the other one is, Sunset Boulevard. Two of the great, great films.
Right. Why did you pick these particular classics?
Well, I think, you know, again, I think they're films that are, they really hold up beautifully. They're films that a lot of people know, which means it will give them an extra added impact to see how different it is and what the values are like when you see it, as I say, on a big screen with a full audience. Plus, they're just good movies.
Yeah.
And if people haven't seen them, what a great way to be introduced to them. Somebody said recently, and I thought it was really wonderful, they said, you know, some people say they're not crazy about old films, but if you've never seen, say, Sunset Boulevard, that's not an old film. That's a new movie.
That's
you've never
right.
seen Casablanca. That's not an old film. That's a new movie. Because right. people shouldn't shut themselves off from films that were not made today, because if you do, you're just really losing a great experience that you could be enjoying.
That's right. And to see these films that, you know, we've all seen on television or CDs, whatever, and to see it in a theater on a big screen, that's going to be a fantastic experience and very
exciting. I think it will be. And you know, there are good prints of these films out, so we're hoping everybody will come and enjoy that experience. And I'm going to do what I do on TCM and, you know, just tell a few stories about the movie before it starts and kind of hope that adds to the experience, because my theory is that, you know, you don't really have to sell people on certain films, but there are a lot of movies that if you don't know them, it really does add to the enjoyment of them if you tell people a little about when they were made or what was going on in the lives of the actors when they made the film, or maybe how the impact that film had on the industry or on that actor. It just makes it more interesting to watch Because okay. I just found as myself that the more I know about movies, the more interesting those movies become to me.
Well, as watching you on Turner Classic Movies, it does enhance the enjoyment of the movie when you give that background information, when you talk about what was going on. It makes it really much more of an experience. So I really enjoy that very much. I know.
I'm glad. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And you watch the film differently once you give
yes.
us all this information. And I think you get more out of the movie. So I really enjoy your talks.
Good. Thanks.
Yeah, my pleasure. At the festival, you will also be hosting honoree events and celebrity chats and filmmaker discussions. Can you tell us a little bit more about these discussion groups that you're going to have? Will they be?
Well, I really don't know that much about it yet. It's going to be a new experience for me, but I'm uh-huh. excited to do it, and I'm really excited to make my first trip to Sedona, which I've always heard so much about. I have a great friend that lives there, Jay Looker, and he for years has told me about Sedona and how much it means to him and what a great place. I also had the pleasure of knowing Ann Miller, who loves Sedona and talked about it a lot and wanted to end her days there. Unfortunately, she died before she really got to do that. But I've always heard about Sedona so much, and I'm really looking forward to being there. I may not leave. I may get there, and you may not be able to get rid of me.
It is a beautiful place, very special place indeed. Can we talk a little bit about how you would compare today's films with the classics? I know there's some great filmmakers today, but I would love to hear your input in comparing them with the classics.
Well, you know, last night at the Academy Awards, I was really realizing how lucky we are to be living where we are right now, because there was kind of a time when I think a lot of movie people were good but not really great, and we had interesting people but not maybe, you know, dazzling people. But when you really consider that in the industry today we have people like Javier Bardem and Daniel Day-Lewis and Kate Blanchett and Helen Mirren and stuff, I mean, those are really great, great people. So I'm very honored to be alive at a time when people like that are making movies. The movies themselves, however, I think were better in other times. And I think that one of the things that you see when you watch Turner Classic Movies is the fact that the films not only were very often stimulating and provocative and suspenseful or exciting or dramatic, but they also kind of entertained you.
Yeah.
A lot of times today we have films that are very violent, very strong, and
yeah.
they're very good, very well made, but they're not entertaining. They don't really make you want to rush through dinner so you can get out to the movies. And also when the movie industry was being run by five major studios and five major kingpins running those studios, they also had a bigger variety of films given to us, mm-hmm. where you were getting not only a choice if you wanted to go to the movies, you could see a musical, or maybe you could see a comedy, or maybe film noir drama, or a mystery, or a western, or adventure, but we don't have that kind of planning of schedules anymore. Now it's a bunch of individuals making movies,
yeah.
so you can end up, as we did this year, with a full platter of very violent, very dark, very heavy movies, like the ones of, with,
yes.
almost without exception, except for Juno, were pretty much the thrust of this year's Academy Awards. So I think that's a big difference. I also
yeah.
think that the movies of the past had people, for the most part, who were much more bigger than life, more glamorous perhaps, were people that you didn't run into in everyday life. So it made them
yeah.
kind of more interesting to go see. It was wonderful to go see a movie with Audrey Hepburn or with Grace
mm-hmm.
Kelly or Humphrey Bogart or Cary Grant or Gary Cooper or Jimmy Stewart. And we don't really have big personalities like that today. And that's not
no,
the
don't.
Fault of the actors. It's the fault of the public, that we really want our actors today to not be bigger than life, but we want them to be exactly life size. We want
mm-hmm.
Robert De Niro to be like the taxi driver we just rode with, or we don't want Michelle Pfeiffer to be beautiful like Grace Kelly was. We want her to look just like the waitress that waited on us in the restaurant yesterday. So it's kind of the way the cycle we're going through right now, but it has had an effect on movies.
The stars of the Hollywood golden era that they call They really were something special. They had a stature, a presence, a quality, something that even today we remember, like Humphrey Bogart, who passed away 50 years ago. We remember Betty Davis. We remember James Cagney. And maybe, and I'd like your input on this, was it the studio system that a lot of stars hated, but they took the actor or the actress and they cultivated them and they groomed them, and did that have play an effect, or was it?
Well, I think that did have a lot to do with it. But also, these were basically big personalities. But you know, something that has a lot to do with it is the fact that we have so much media today.
Yeah.
And because we have Netflix and we have Turner Classic Movies and we have people being interviewed on Entertainment Tonight and Access Hollywood and Show Business Tonight and all these shows, they are so much in our lives, so accessible that we don't find that much mystery about them anymore. We know
That's
too much
true.
About them. In
that
those days, you know,
true.
you used to go to the movies and maybe would see Clark Gable for, 4 hours a year? Maybe two-hour movies, and that was it. But today, an actor can't do that. If you make a movie, if Clark Gable was around today, he would be not only be seen in his movie each year, but also reruns. He'd have to compete with himself on Netflix. He'd be on the Jay Leno show publicizing his movie. So would Marlene Dietrich. So would Ingrid Bergman and things. And people wear out their welcome that way. They're just too accessible. So the actors in those days didn't really have that problem. When you weren't seeing Greta Garbo in a movie once a year, a two-hour movie, you weren't seeing her, period. You weren't even hearing her on the radio. You might see pictures of her in a magazine, but you never got the image except going to the movies. So when a Garbo with film would open, or a film with James Cagney or Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, you would run palpitating to the movie theater to see them, because it was a very rare experience. But today you can't be rare. There's just too much media hyping you all the time.
I never thought of it that way, but you're right. There was a kind of a mystery about the old stars because they weren't that exposed. And today,
if you saw George Clooney, you know, who comes about as close as any today to the old time movie star, you only saw him for maybe 2 hours a year, and that was all you ever got to see of him, he'd be much more mysterious, and he'd be much more bigger than life. And if the only time you ever saw him was on a huge movie screen in your local theater. But today we get a lot of George, because we get him on pop shows. We get him now as his portfolio of movies gets bigger, he's more accessible. We get, as I say, see him on TCM, see him on Netflix, and it's a lot of George. And George, most of the time when we see him, is on a TV size screen, so he's not bigger than life.
Yeah.
And so that would always keep him from being as big an image as, say, Clark Gable was, or John Garfield, or Jerome Power, some of the big male stars of that period.
I never thought of it that way, but they're kind of too accessible.
That has an effect. You know, they're not that many people in our lives. In our own lives that we can put up with all the time. Even our friends, we sometimes don't want to see that often. And so it goes with these movie stars that we're seeing all the time.
Yeah, and plus the paparazzi are all over, so they're constantly exposed. And like you said,
when I first came to Hollywood and used to go to events, and this was in the 60s, you know, those people were all around, but you could go to a party and you could meet a Henry Fonda, you could meet Robert Wagner and Natalie Wood and all of that, and you'd go outside and there wasn't paparazzi around all the time. And you could, Lucille Ball could live in a house with no gate, no anything, just a walkway. You could walk up and knock on her door, but today that wouldn't be possible. It's just that whole thing has changed so much.
I
blame it all on Rupert Murdoch, but he may not agree with that.
That is terrible. The way they persecute these poor stars, it's really bad. You mentioned Lucille Ball, and I know she was a great friend of yours and a mentor. Would you mind sharing a little more about how she influenced
you? No, not at all. I was very lucky. When I first came to California, she was my first boss. I was under contract to Lucy and Desi at the Desi Lu Studios, and I was just a kid from a small town in the state of Washington, and thought I wanted to be an actor. And she was putting a contract table together, and I got lucky enough to be in that. And she was wonderful because she really did guide my life. The more she knew me, and I had a chance to spend a lot of time around her because Desi at that point was kind of frisking around with other ladies, so he wasn't home all that much. So there were two or three of us that she kind of took under her wing because she saw that we were passionate about movies and what we were doing. And the more she got to know me, she said, I don't think being an actor is going to make you happy. She said, I think you're a nice kid from a middle-class family, and I think that you're not maybe street smart enough to compete with some of the really ambitious people from New York that you would be competing with. And she said, you love movie history and everything, and you know who all these old character actors are and stars. And she said at that point, and it was true, she said, nobody's writing about them. We don't have much history. We have enough actors. You should be a writer and do that.
Oh.
She said the first thing, and I had been a journalism major at the University of Washington. She said, the first thing you should do is write a book. And I said, why write a book? And she said, well, if you write a book, she said, and are competing to be a writer, people will always give you the job if you've written the book because everybody says they want to write a book. Nobody has the discipline to sit down and do it. And if you show you have that kind of discipline, it doesn't even have to be a good book, but she said, they'll look at you differently. And so I really respected her, and I knew that she was saying this not for any reason but for my own good. So I did kind of follow that advice, and I wrote a book that had to do with the Academy Awards, and that truly did, not immediately, but it did eventually kind of set the whole course of my career. It got me into the Hollywood Reporter, where I write. That got me into television. One television gig to another. I ended up getting to do a show in New York for a year. Once in New York, I really found my haven where I was happiest, and it also allowed me to meet a lot of these people. So Lucy was very important to my life, and after she divorced Desi Arnaz, she kind of disappeared from my life, except usually about once a year. She'd call and check in and make sure she'd say, hey, are you eating right? Who are your friends? Where are you living? All that, like a mother hen. And so I always felt she was there. She always made me feel that she was there if I needed any kind of advice.
Wow.
And it was very interesting because I was driving down the street in Los Angeles one time after I was living in New York, and I saw this flash of red hair walking with a couple of people down the street. I thought, my God, there's only one person with hair that color, and that's Lucille Ball, because it's kind of an orange-red. And I looked over, and it was her. This was a very busy street, but right there happened to be a parking place. Now, this never happens. I always call it a Doris Day parking place, because I always had a Doris Day movie. Whenever she went to a bank or any store in New York City, there was always a parking place right there in front of the bank for her. So I think that's
right.
A Doris Day parking place. So because it was there, I drove over, I parked my car, I went over and I said hello. We had a wonderful chat, and it was about a month later that she died. So I always felt that was kind of providence, that I should be able to run into her and in my own way say goodbye to her, because she was a wonderful person and very, very important in my life.
Well, you were very lucky to have a friend and mentor like she was.
Yeah.
So she really put you on your path.
Yes, she certainly did. And she was right. I knew instinctively that what she was telling me was right, that being an actor would not make me happy. It's not something I would have pursued. Mm-hmm. And she was absolutely right, because I've been to one play in my lifetime since I was around Lucy in which I wished I was in the play. So obviously I was not cut out to be an actor, because I didn't want it that much.
Well, that's good that you found that out in the early part of your life.
Yeah, indeed. But I was also very lucky, because I have a friend who's known me for years that said, you're so lucky. You were always gathering all that useless information about movies, and you had no place to put it, and you waited until God or Ted Turner, maybe the same person, came along and invented a place for you to use it. And it's true, because when I was gathering all this kind of information about the movies, there was no place to use it. I mean, there was no hope of ever making a career out of that, because that was before cable, before Right. People like Ted Turner bought film libraries, and before people wanted to see old films. So I was very lucky that with that information, that I was the one, happened to be in the right place at the right time to get the chance to be the face of Turner Classic Movies.
That's wonderful. Now, do you, like you have so many stories about so many stars, when you're going to show a particular film, do you have to do research, or is most of this right at the tip
of your head? Not really. You know, it's really all up there in the brain.
Yeah.
I do research on some things, and I also do research to learn new facts and also to, you know, reemphasize whether I've got the details correct. But mm-hmm. I went to Hollywood at a very lucky time. I came to Hollywood in the early 60s, and it was a time when people like Henry Fonda and Betty Davis and Judy mm-hmm. Garland and others were here and were accessible. Mm-hmm. They were no longer working as busily as they had. They were still very vibrant people. They loved someone like me that knew their past and could mm-hmm. talk about it, and they didn't have to tell people how important they were. Mm-hmm. And it seems funny today to think of it, but there were times when people like Betty Davis were not that sought after by anybody. Nobody really cared about their own old films like they do today. So they were willing and happy to sit down with somebody like me and talk about their lives. If I had gone to Hollywood 10 years earlier, they would have still been active in their careers and wouldn't have had time for me. If I come 10 or 15 years later, they wouldn't have been around anymore. Either they would have passed away or moved away or something. So I went to Hollywood at a very, very lucky time because these people were there. I got to know many of them, and I got to observe them and hear their stories and all of that, which is the information that I try to, you know, use on Turner Classic Movies.
I know... I did a little research on you, and I know Betty Davis was a very good friend of yours, and she's one of my all-time favorite actresses.
Well, she was great. I've always felt badly. One thing about Betty is that she's always kind of been misinterpreted. People have always mixed her up with the character she played in All About Eve, but she was really very down to earth. She was strong, but she was not difficult until the later parts of her life when she had cancer, she had a mastectomy, she had a daughter that really betrayed her publicly, but she was a good egg, and she was so good to me, so much fun to be around, that once, you know, she became complicated, there was an awful lot of history to fall back on. That's why one would still stick around and be a friend of hers, but she was terrific. She was sensible. She loved to cook. She was a homebody. She didn't have to be the center of attention in a room. She loved acting. She loved her career. She was a very bright, very nice lady, and I feel very honored to know her. I'm actually going to be doing a tribute to her on her 100th birthday on May 1st for the Academy in Los Angeles. And that we're gathering together a lot of people that worked with Betty or knew her well and talking about her show, film clips and stuff. So I'm really looking forward to that. There's also going to be a Betty Davis stamp this year, and we're going to, I think, launch it for the post office at that event.
Wow, that's great. What do you think she would say if she knew that we still think she's a fantastic actress and we still love her movies and you're going to have this centennial celebrating her birth? What do you think her comments would be if she knew all this?
She'd probably say, do it right. Make sure you do it right. And she would not be surprised we're doing it. She knew her value, which I loved about her. And she would think that she deserved it, which I also liked about her. There's no false modesty there. But I think she'd be pleased I was doing it because I know she was fond of me, but she wouldn't compliment me as much as just say, get it right, Osborne.
She seemed like a very great person, like very honest.
Yeah, she was. She knew that about herself, though, too, that she always said, you know, you catch more flies with honey than vinegar, but she was vinegar, and she had to be honest, she never told a lie. She couldn't lie. That was not in her makeup, and she was brutally honest, but it did get her in a lot of trouble, and she always found it rather amusing that somebody who couldn't lie would make their career as an actress, which in its own way is, you know, fitting all the time anyway. But she was a real straight shooter, and that's what you had to admire about her. But it also came out in her work, because her work was so honest. She always, whenever she did anything, she never cowered, she never hid anything, she let it all out.
I remember a movie, it was later in her career, it was not a great movie, it was with Carl Malden, I don't remember the title, she was playing a twin, and in one scene she had
Ringer.
Yes, that's it. She had to push the twin into a seat, and she pushed her with so much force. Sitting in the audience, you felt it, and you felt this woman was going to go through the wall. She was so much into that part. I mean, she was a force. She was dynamite.
She never held back. She
no
was 100%.
No way. She was great. I loved her in everything.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite movies was one, I think it was 1939, The Letter with Herbert Marshall. It was
1940. Yeah, it was that is kind of one of my, maybe my favorite Betty Davis movie, actually.
Oh, well, I mean, I can see that over and over. It had characters, it had interest, it was beautifully written, beautifully directed.
Yes, and it had a great music score.
Yes.
Great direction by William Wyler. And another thing, I had the pleasure of watching that movie with her one time, and she kept pointing out during the movie, not anything about her performance, but how great it was, the atmosphere that William Wyler in that movie created, supposedly on a kind of an outpost in Singapore, a rubber plantation, but how real it all seemed, but it was all done on a soundstage at the Warner Brothers studio in Burbank, California. None of it shot on location, but it creates such a mood that you really feel you're there. And
beautiful job, beautiful. One of my real all-time favorites of hers. Oh, Mr. Osborne, it looks like our time is coming to a close. I could talk to you for hours. This
Thank you. Well, I've really enjoyed it, too.
Well,
I look forward to seeing you at the Sedona Film Festival.
I will seek you out. I would love to meet you. And I want to remind our listeners again, the Sedona Film Festival is this week, February 27th to March 21st. And Mr. Osborne will be there with his classic movies. And people who are interested, their website is www.sedonafilmfestival.com or call 928-282-1177. Thank you so much, Mr. Osborne. It was
my pleasure.
Nice talking to you. Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for joining us today. This has been At the Movies with Joanna on Sedona Talk Radio. I'm Joanna Paxinu, and that's a wrap.